You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Five Rounds Podcast, the only podcast out there with the cardio for those deep water championship rounds. I am Mags, and with me, as always, my son Carlos. Carlos, how are you?
Oh, I'm not too bad after a couple of days stretch looking after her daughter as my wife finishes off her final exams for uni. Good luck with them, Kira.
It's been quite hectic. She's a tear away now, definitely.
Oh, definitely. Obviously, with everything that's going on, she's got like 30,000 words to write in the span of fucking God knows how many days. But she'll do it.
It's been confirmed. This coming weekend, we're actually going to get UFC back now. I can't say I'm happy with the way it's gone about, but I have missed watching UFC, so we're definitely going to watch it. But we've also been given basically three events in the space of a week. Now, next week's episode will obviously cover UFC 249, but then the week after that, we'll be literally covering two shows in one. Because we've got a midweek show and then another weekend show. But I wanted to actually just go over like the cards for these upcoming fights and just basically have a look at what we think about them. So let's start with this weekend's card. This weekend's coming up's card, UFC 249, and it's stacked to the gills. On the early prelims, we've got Ryan Spann against one of Carson's favourites, Smiling Sam Alvey. We've got Brass Mitchell taking on Charles Rosa. Vicente Luque on the early prelims. This is a guy who was like top of the fucking main card recently against taking on Nico Price, another one of Carson's favourites. Then we've got Uriah Hall making his comeback against Jacare. We've got Carla Esparza taking on Karate Hot and Michelle Wharton, and these are still the prelims. Michelle Wharton, who's pushing for a title shot on the prelims. Alexei Oleinik against Vadum, the former champion on the prelims. Anthony Pettis versus Cowboy Cerrone, who headlined against Conor McGregor very recently.
Well, speaking of Cerrone, he is the only fighter who, I know Dana White's basically, He shut it down. I think it was Brian Ortega we were doing an interview with, and Brian Ortega said, have you heard what Cowboy said? Like, he wants to be the first fighter to fight three times in a week. And Dana White were like, we're trying to basically, because of everything that's going on, we're trying to keep it as safe as possible. But yeah, I can't, if he wants to do that, no, but yeah.
it would not surprise me with him. I remember when he used to fight like 6-7 times a year. So anyway, going on to the main card, we've got our biggest enemy, Greg Hardy, taking on another can in Jorgen De Castro. Jeremy Stevens against Calvin Kattar, and then three big matches to round off the card. We've got Ngannou taking on Rozenstruik, we've got Cejudo and Cruz, and we've got Ferguson taking on Gaethje. What do you think about that card, like, all round? It's so stacked.
I knew the cards were going to be stacked. Obviously, the first four or five cards leading back up to when the lockdown and all this stuff blows over. I knew they were going to be stacked, but Dana White has gone fucking all out. Well, he's not just Dana White, it's Dana White and obviously Sean Shelby and all the rest of them, but they've gone full out to make sure that, yo, if you're paying for this, you are getting your money's worth, and we haven't had like mixed martial arts for near enough 2 months. It's I can't say I'm not happy with it. I'm over the moon with how fucking stacked the cards are. Yeah. I know I've saw a couple of tweets and stuff like that, basically like slating the UFC because of putting these high named fighters on like the prelims, but at the end of the day, you've got to think about it. You can't think about it as the prelims and the main event for these first couple of ones, because these big names have had no other choice because they haven't been able to make money in the last 2 months. So if they've got a chance to fight on the card, don't matter where it is, fucking fight on that card, make some money.
Like personally for the fighters, I understand. I understand it. They've got families to feed. They do need to earn money, and I just think it's quite exploitative of the UFC to put them in this position. But that, like, I can't disagree that that's a stacked card. Which the fights are standing out to you? I mean, obviously we've got the main card, three massive fights there, two obviously title shots. But which fights are you like thinking, oh, that's a good fight, I can't wait for that one?
See, the one I've just got to put out is the main event, is for the Ferguson and Gaethje fight. I think they were scheduled to fight, or they were in talks to fight a couple of months back or about a year back, but now they're actually finally going to get to do it. Yeah, the circumstances have been shit, how they're going to fight each other, but at the end of the day, that's going to be a fucking war in that octagon. But the one fight that stands out to me on that card is the Waterson fight. That, a lot of people, I think, since Joanna has sort of come away from that division, I think a lot of the R's have come away from that division as well, and Waterson, she's got sort of like the fan base to basically bring the light back into that division, and with Thug Rose sort of wanting to come back into the picture now, I believe, because them two have already fought each other, is Thug Rose and Waterson, and their first fight when I watched it, I believe they were fucking fantastic. Them two had a good fucking scrap. So if them two come back, I reckon it would bring more eyes to the division, and basically it'll bring just more reputation, if you will, more respect to the division if them two were able to fight it out again.
Yeah, and a win over Carlos Barza would be a massive notch on a belt.
Well, that's it. Carlos Barza is the first strawweight champion. So a win over her, and then if she does fight Rosa and that lot, not only have you got like a... Because she was supposed to be a superstar years ago before she sort of like fell off the bandwagon, if you will.
Yeah, I think it was just a jump up from Invicta.
Yeah,
she was literally the face of Invicta for a long, long time, and then she jumped to UFC when they kind of like bought Invicta out and used it as like a feeder. And yeah, she has struggled to find a feet in the first few matches, but I think she's really done well in challenging herself. I think she's faced Joanna before. And got beat, but she put a good effort in, and I think a win over Esparza really does put her in prime position for a title shot.
Oh, definitely, because you take a win over Esparza, you've got the first win over the first strawweight champion. You then climb the ranks for your second fight. Yeah, if Rosa comes back, you fight her and beat her, you're already on to talks of being the best women's strawweight fighter. You've already beat two champions there. There's only two more champions to beat before you come the title contender like Amanda Nunes.
Yeah.
And I think she's on that. If she sticks the way she's going, she's on that path. And I know she's not mega old, is she? Is Waterson?
No.
She's only like what, 30?
Mid 30s, yeah. Something like that.
So she's got a long time to go, and it's not like she's been in like a lot of wars either. So she hasn't took a lot of punishment. Hence her name, the karate hotter. She's done a lot of fucking modelling, hasn't she?
So. Yeah. For me, the standout fight on this whole card, I mean, that, like I said, that main card is stacked, the premiums are stacked, but the fight out that really jumps out to me is Uriah Hall taking on Jacare. I think Jacare, obviously in the twilight of his career, but he's still an absolute animal when he's fighting. And Uriah Hall, I still go back to his showings on The Ultimate Fighter when he was literally putting people in hospital with spinning kicks.
Well, that's it.
I know he kind of like, he lost the like passion for it, almost like that killer instinct. But I think when him and someone like Souza, who's going to push him, I think we'll get the best out of him. And I think that's going to be an absolute banger of a fight.
I say, I can't wait for that fight. Now, my take on Uriah Hall, like you said, he's still got the vicious knockout on Tough at the end of it. That he owns that fucking status, that spinning heel kick where Jesus Christ, it was fucking out of this world. But like you say, I think he fell off when he fought Gastelum.
Yeah.
Gastelum, I know people are sleeping on Gastelum because he's fought against Izzy, but when, at the end of the day, Gastelum, he fought for a title like that, so you know how good he must have been at that Tough final when he was fighting Uriah Hall. Uriah Hall, he went in there thinking and I couldn't really, in a way I couldn't blame him, he went in there thinking he was the next big thing, he was the next dog's bollocks, because everyone was saying, oh look at him, he's like the next Anderson Silva, if he wins this he should go straight fight Anderson Silva for the title, he shouldn't have to fight these competitors, he should have to just jump straight over him. And I think when Gastelum laid that whooping on him of just pure wrestling, showing him that, yeah, you might be able to knock people out, but if you're fighting someone like me who's got good takedown defence and who's a good wrestler, I'm just going to fucking drown you. And you're going to wish that you knew what to do, like wrestling defence. But Uriah Hall, I think he needs this win more than Jacare at this moment in time. Because like you say, Jacare is in his twilight of his career. He's one of them fighters that, yeah, he's never been able to reach gold, but people will still know his name in years to come because of what he's been able to do in the octagon.
Is the ideal gatekeeper in that division.
Definitely.
If you can beat him, you can show you can hang with the top contenders.
Definitely. And if Uriah Hall doesn't beat him, I believe he's going to fall into that category where Jacare were, like, yeah, you're going to sort of remember his name for what he did in Tough and his knockout and stuff like that, but he's always going to be that next generation of gatekeepers for that division.
Yeah. So then, let's go on to next Wednesday's card, UFC Fight Night, headlined by Anthony Smith versus Glover Teixeira. But again, this is, to say it's a midweek fight night, it's still quite a decent card. We've got, on the prelims, we've got Hunter Azur taking on Brian Keller. We've got Sejara Eubanks and Sarah Moras going ahead. We've got Michael Johnson taking on Thiago Moises, and the featured prelim, Andrei Arlovski taking on Philip Lins. That's a cracking fight there. And then some interesting fights on this main card, starting with Ricky Simon taking on Ray Borg.
Fucking that's good. Quality fight.
Carl Robertson taking on Marvin Vittoria. Alexander Hernandez taking on Drew Dober. Big Ben Rothwell and Ovince St. Pierre making his heavyweight debut, and then that main event of Smith versus Teixeira, where Smith's promised to make Teixeira tap out and be the first person to do so. Again, Carlos, what do you think of this card?
See, the one card for the main event, the Glover Teixeira versus Anthony Smith, I was speaking to a guy on Twitter about this fight, and he was basically saying how he's basically ducking the competition. He should, because of the win over Gustafsson, he should go on and fight. He should be basically shouting out for the title match. And I'm like, no, I like the way he's doing it. He knows that he's got all the time in the rest of his career. He knows, yeah, he's got to win over Gustafsson. Don't get greedy with it. Don't get too out of it. Because that's what he did when he fought Shogun, when he fought Evans. He thought, I'm going to beat Bonesy. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to take his fucking head off. And then realised, hang on a minute, this is John Bones Jones I'm fighting here. Literally pound for pound best fighter in the world, so I like the way he's going about it. He's fought Gustafsson, now he's fighting Teixeira. Yeah, Teixeira might be in his twilight zone, but at the end of the day, he's still a dangerous fighter. And if you get a win over him, it's going to give you a bit more confidence booster, and you're going to have a bit more experience going in there again against a guy like John Bones Jones. I believe he's doing it the right way, and if he gets a win over it, that's two wins. And how can anybody say that he's not then? Shouldn't be the next guy to fight Bones when you've got, I know Dominic Reyes, everyone's saying he should get the title shot. Why? He's just been beat by Bones.
I think that's what the UFC are looking to have. I think they're looking to run that back because of how controversial that win was. I think you're right with Anthony Smith like doing this the right way. I think logistically, with the fact that it is probably going to be Bones versus Reyes, there's no point sitting back and waiting, because you don't know what the outcome of Bones' issue with his recent law problems is. You don't know how long it's going to take for this rematch with him and Reyes. You don't know. It's there's a lot of things up in the air, and a win over someone like Glover would kind of rubber stamp that you are next in line. So I think you're right. He's being sensible in taking a very hard fight just to kind of rubber stamp the fact that he's the next man waiting.
Yeah, he's still a contender. But then there's a couple of other fights on this card. A lot of people that I don't think are looking at Rick Story versus Ray Borg. I think a lot of people aren't looking at that fight just because.
No, it's Ricky Simon.
Ricky Simon against Ray Borg. I think a lot of people are not looking at that fight just because of what DJ were able to do to Ray Borg with that fucking armbar.
That to me, looking at this card, that's the weirdest fight on the card for me, because Ricky Simon started in the UFC with a lot of hype, very excitable fighter, very clear Guida-like in kind of the way he fights, but he soon like dropped off and he soon like kind of found his level. And I think Raeborg is head and shoulders above him. He's like, Raeborg's like looking at title contention, and Ricky Simon is kind of like in that middle pack. Mm. And it was just weird. I mean, I understand with the fact that they've got a limited amount of fighters to go at because of the lockdown and stuff like that. So the fact that they've been able to even get a fight in the bantamweight is good, but it's just a weird, it's almost like a gimmick fight for Raeborg there, which in a way could be more dangerous because he might overlook Ricky Simon.
The way you've worded it is the way I'm thinking it in my head, and that's why I'm so excited for this, because I do believe that Raeborg will sort of look at this as a gimme fight. And when you look at someone like Ricky Simon as a gimme fight, them motherfuckers can swing hands, mm-hmm. and they won't stop swinging until you're on your arse. So that's what's going to make that an interesting fight. But going on to the two heavyweight fights on this card, we'll go on to the Arlovski one first. The Arlovski one, his opponent, what's his name?
Philippe Lins.
If he gets a win over Arlovski, that's again another big name that's going to put you up, not title contention, but top 10, be able to shout out them sort of name fighters to get your way up there. Because even like Dana said, like, he's, Arlovski is, he's basically been with the UFC fucking forever. He's been literally a legend in not just the heavyweight division, but within the UFC. So anytime you get a win over one of them sort of guys, people are going to know your name and you're going to get looked at as, fucking hell, he's just beat Arlovski. Because Arlovski, a lot of people can say he's old, but you tell me the last time you saw that motherfucker age. He looks the same now than what he did. You know what I mean? He doesn't seem to age. He doesn't seem to get old. He just seems to just be able to fucking fight. Yeah, he might lose sometimes, but you know, if you go in there against Arlovski, you've got to fucking go in there. And if you let your guard down at any second, he's going to make you fucking pay for it.
And not only that, with Lins making his UFC debut, it's another kind of big like notch on your belt if you can like take out someone with the name value of someone like Andre Arlovski. I mean, he's been multiple champions in multiple different kind of combat sports. Yeah, it's a big name on your CV.
Definitely, but the one thing that is, if he were to be Arlovski, he's got the perfect opportunity in this card, because Orvin St. Preux is making his debut in the heavyweight division, so they're both making the debuts in that heavyweight division at the UFC. And if Orvin St. Preux gets that victory over Ben Rothwell that we were speaking about last week, that I believe he is going to, he's going to get him into them later rounds, he's going to fucking drown him with the wrestling and he's going to choke him out. I do believe he's wrestling and his submissions, he's going to be better in that heavyweight division than he were in the light heavyweight division. But then again, Arlovski's opponent has got the opportunity of a lifetime then to go, if I do beat Arlovski, he can get on that mic and go, Orvin St. Preux, you're making your debut. If you win, why don't we run it back? Because then that's another time to you get another big name fighter that if you were to win, that's going to boost you again. Another 5 levels up. So it's always about planning your next step. What fights? Like Leon Edwards came out, I think it was like 2 days ago, and he said because of that, how much he's been basically fucked over with his Tyron Woodley and Masvidal, he's basically said he doesn't want to fight anyone below him. He will only fight for the title or contenders above him. And a lot of people are giving him shit. No, I agree with that. Then he's been scheduled to fight these top.
Know your worth. What your value is.
Exactly. That's exactly exactly his point. He was scheduled to fight these other guys. It's not his fault he's been fucked over. And at the end of the day, I believe he's right to be able to get into that position and say them sort of stuff. He's not fighting anyone apart from the title and people who's above him. Now, if Arlovski's opponent were able to beat Arlovski, then OSP, I think he's in that sort of stance to go, yeah, I might only be 2-0 in the UFC, but look at the motherfuckers I've beat. Yeah, I want to fight that top five.
Yeah, I get that. It's a bit of a stretch because there's other people I'd say higher ranked.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not saying he fight for the title. I'm saying like if he were to beat these people,
he can call out a better quality of opponent. I understand that, but I don't think a win over Arlovski and then a win over OSP kind of guarantees you to go up against someone like Curtis Blaydes or Derek Lewis. I think there is levels.
But you got to think with that. In that heavyweight division, we're always on about, it's one of them divisions that is so lacklustre with talent and opponents. You get a couple of big wins, big name wins, and you are sort of, to these casual fans in that lot, you put two exciting wins on against two name opponents. If you get two first round fucking knockouts, finishers, and people are going looking at your name, Dana White will jump all over that because he loves heavyweight guys who the opponents basically, who the fans basically hang off the dick.
Yeah, I understand what you mean, but I think it's kind of like learning to walk before you run. I think you've got to, first of all, Philip Lindsay's got to get past Arlovski, which is not an easy task, and then OSP has got to get past Ben Rothwell, which is not an easy task. It's easy to play MMA math, but you've still got to get that job done in the first place. Let's go on to the third card next weekend. The 16th, which is like 2 weeks away. It's mental that we're getting three cards in the space of a week. I absolutely love it. I just wish it were in better circumstances. Anyway, again, this I'd say is probably the weakest card on paper, but if this were any other kind of event, you'd be very, very happy with this card. We started the prelims with Rodrigo Ferreira taking on Dontale Mays. We've got Darren Elkins against Nate Landwehr. We've got Courtney Casey taking on Mara Romero Barella. Mark Davis against Jika Kikadze. And then the featured, Kevin Holland against Anthony Hernandez. That's a cracking fight in that middleweight division. Then onto the main card, the funniest name in UFC, Song Yadong, taking on Marlon Vera, Eric Anders, and Christoph Jocko, one of Carlos's favourite fighters recently. Dan Agge taking on one of my favourite fighters, Edson Barboza. That's a banger of a fight. That is exciting just to read. And then we were getting the co-main event, Clary Gadea taking on Angela Hill. And then another main event, and it's a bittersweet main event for me. It's a fight that I'm looking to see, Alistair Overeem trying to come back off that devastating, destroyed lip from Rosenstreich. Mm-hmm. But it's facing Walt Harris, who's obviously had one of the worst times in history with what happened with his daughter and stuff like that. But it's good to see him kind of getting back and doing what he does best in fighting. Carlos, what stands out on this card?
Well, just go to Walt Harris first. I think he deserves the respect to be the first to basically get spoken about on this. But I agree with that, what Dana said. Yeah, fair enough. Everyone might be going through a hard time, but just put yourself in these shoes and just imagine how much it's got to take for you, not just to get over sort of what's gone on, because you're never gonna be able to get over what's gone on, but just to say, right, I need to sort of get my life back on track. I need to get back in there. I need to do what's best for my family. I need to fight. I need to make money. I need to look after them. And top respect for Walt Harris. He's well within his right to take as much fucking time as he wants with being with him and his family, but he's not only chose to come back, but chose to come back as the main event against Alistair Overeem. That is everyone. If you don't give him respect for that, fuck you. A big fuck you. Simple as that. Alistair Overeem. What can you say about him? He's another one who's just a legend, and a win again. Another win over him. Like, look at Ngannou. A win over
Rosenstreich is now co-main event. It's the third fight, but technically a co-main event on UFC 249 because of what he did to...
Look at them. Both of them two are fighting. Ngannou and Rosenstreich, they're both fighting each other. And them, in my personal opinion, them two both sort of made the career in UFC of fighting Overeem.
And beating Overeem.
Exactly. So that's a dangerous fight, and I can't exactly wait for that.
My only problem with it would be if Walt is in the right kind of mindset.
Yeah, definitely. That's going to be a tough...
Because if you don't go into a fight against Alistair Overeem with 100% focus, that guy will kick your face off.
He will. He's done it 100 other times. He's got too much of a win record.
Look what he did with Brock.
Exactly.
Brock didn't have he wasn't 100% fit. He didn't have the focus, and he got his liver kicked in.
Well, that's exactly it. And with Alistair Overeem, he's done kickboxing ever since he was a little kid. So he knows how to fucking kick. He knows how to kick hard. He knows how to kick fast. That's as simple as that. That's a dangerous fight for Walt, in my opinion. I know a lot of people might say, "Oh, that's an easy fight. Walt's just going to knock him out." If you believe you're going to go in there and knock a guy like Alistair Overeem just out, you're fucking daft. You don't know what you're talking about.
Look at Rozenstruik. Rozenstruik has got dangerous hands, and it took him till the very last minute to put away Overeem. And Overeem, up to then, were probably winning the fight.
Yeah, definitely. But the one thing I can say about Overeem, he's had one of the... I know he's not been able to reach the title for the UFC goal, but he's been fucking I think he's been Strikeforce champion. I know he's been Pride champion. I know he's won the Pride, the Grand Prix and stuff like that. He's been in there with some of the best. He's beat some of the best and he's lost some of the best. And I do believe if he gets beat off Walt Harris, maybe he retires in the octagon. Maybe he asks for one last big fight before he hangs the gloves up. But I do believe he's only got one, maybe two more fights before Alistair puts an end to what's been a fucking deadly and what a lot of people can say a respectful career.
Yeah. For me, the standout fight of the prelims is definitely Anthony Hernandez versus Kevin Holland. Mm. Two guys who, in that middleweight division, up to very recently, we were talking about maybe becoming contenders. I think Kevin Holland has dropped off a little bit. He's lost his last couple, mainly through lack of concentration more than anything. But Hernandez, 8-1 record. He's still a very, very young fighter. Got the chance to really make a statement in that region. But for me, the one standout fight is that featherweight versus Dan Agha
and
Edson Barboza. Wow. Edson Barboza, that how you can't be excited watching Edson Barboza fight is beyond me. Throwing someone who has been making statement after statement after statement recently in Dan Agha, and it's just a recipe for a gorgeous fight.
Definitely. Well, the one thing about this fight that makes it so interesting is, like I said, Dan Agha is one of my recent favourites and what he's sort of been able to do, for how much hard work he's basically putting into to basically making it at the end of the day. And I respect a lot of fighters, but mainly people who stand out to me who do stuff like that. It takes some heart to basically fucking
I've just got his record up now. Dan Agha is 13-2, and his last loss was actually to Julio Archer in 2018. But some of the names is rammed off since. I mean, he's beat Kevin Aguilar, he's beat Merced Bektik. I mean,
just some of the... I know a lot of people don't know the names, but if you're like a hardcore fan, you will know the names, and you'll know these sort of fighters that... They might not be big names, but they're still top quality fighters that know how to fucking fight.
Especially in a division that sometimes, it kind of doesn't get the respect it deserves since Conor left the featherweight division. But there's still some big fighters in that division.
Definitely.
And either one, a win for either, it kind of cements maybe they should be at least in that conversation for a title. So, I mean, Edson Barboza has always floated around the kind of title pitch, but never been able to make that jump. And I think a win over Dan Agha, it might be enough for him to say, yeah, come on, it's my time now.
See, that's exactly what I was going to say. Dan Agha, if he beats Edson Barboza in that division, he can no doubt say that, yo, come on, take me seriously now. I want to fight the next opponent to get my chance at that title. But then you look at it as Edson Barboza. This motherfucker, he started at 170. He cut down to 155. And he's not getting younger, he's only getting older. And people say, as you get older, it's harder to cut weight. And this guy's sort of prove that he's not fucking normal, because he's not only cut down from 170 to 155, he's cut down from 155 to 145 now. It's an extra 10 pounds, and it might not seem a lot, but believe me, I've, for one of my last fights, I had to cut, I think I was 5 pounds that I needed to cut down, and that fucking hell, that near enough killed me, that. So when you already cut from 170 to 155, then having to try and cut that extra 10 pounds, fucking top respect to Edmund Barbosa. Now, will this work in his favour? Will, because of the opponents he's fought before, that he's fought Paul Felder twice, so he's been in there with some wars, he's been hit with some heavy shots. Will that work in his favour going down, or will it take away from his advantage that he can't take heavy shots because he's lost so much energy and weight that one crack will put him down? We won't know, but again, because you're dropping so much weight, and if he's done it healthy and clean, he could be much sharper, much faster, much stronger. So this could be a perfect weight for him. Yeah, probably not for a long period of time, because cutting down to 155 when you are getting older is gonna fuck your body up well and truly later on in the years. And the UFC and these fighters have got good enough doctors to basically tell them, yeah, you could do it, but we'd highly advise you not to do it if you want to basically be alive in the next 20 years. So if he does get a win over Dan Agyin, he looks that better. If you were Volkanovski now, and if he does get a win, you'd be like, that's a big bitch right there coming for fucking my head.
I mean, some of the people that Volkanovski's got to face, I mean, obviously he's got Max Holloway breathing down his neck, the former champion, but then you've got Korean Zombie, you've got Brian Ortega, you've got Magomed Sharipov, Frankie Edgar still in that mix, Yair Rodriguez still in that mix. I'd be a frightened guy.
How can people not be excited? I know a lot of people have been saying it, like, it's got boring since Connors went. I don't think it has. I think it's got better since Connors went. Since Connors fucked off away from that division, you've heard a lot more fighters. And to be honest with you, that division, apart from that and the lightweight and probably pushing middleweight for how it's going, that's probably one of my favourite divisions.
Yeah, and it always seems to be that way, though, when there's a fighter who's so dominant. I mean, look at the lightweights now. It's good that Bones is a dominant fighter, but it kind of does make it hard for anyone else to get that kind of recognition, because whenever you get to face Bones, he's just going to beat
him. He's just going to bat him. Well, look at it like, and I know a lot of people love dominant champions. I love them too. At the end of the day, it's perfect, but sometimes it's maybe, I know a lot of people, and I understand it myself, I know it's sometimes like, we know he's a dominant champion, but how would that division go if somebody else were champion? And like you say, Matt Bones, look at Smith, just go back to these guys he fought. Gustafsson could have been a fucking superstar, Dominic Reyes could have been a superstar, Smith, for the people who be, could have been a superstar, but they all fought Bones, and he's just... that next level better than all these other guys, and you can just
Thiago Santos.
Exactly, it's like all these people, and like MMA math, I know on paper and in the sound, I know it all works out most majority of the time, but then you get these odd equations that fuck your mathematics up. And John Bones Jones, like Khabib, like JSP, these are all mathematical equations that fuck it all up, because you can't understand them, because you think, hang on a minute, MMA evolves in time. You can't be stuck to one fighting style and be fighting in that same era and still be fighting two eras down the line and still be on top, still be champion and still beating these other guys. Bones is one of them guys. He was the youngest UFC champion, and he's fought in these last two generations and beat the best and still been on top. Them are some of the equations that you just cannot figure out. So that's when you think maybe if they were equations, someone did figure it out, how would that division go? How would it evolve?
Yep.
And we've been able to see it with the featherweight division. Because obviously Conor went up, obviously no one were able to beat him, but he went up, so he left the division, and that's when we've been able to see it evolve. And I'm not saying it's bad that people like that in that division are sort of killing it, because they're not. It's like They've brought all the eyes. You've got to give them all the respect. It's like Ronda with the women's bantamweight. Holly Holm beats her, but look at how much respect Holly gave her afterwards, because she knew without Ronda, them divisions would be nothing.
Well, they wouldn't even be in the UFC. Exactly. Dana's already said that time and time again. If it wasn't for the star power of Ronda Rousey, he wouldn't have had women fighting in the UFC.
Exactly. So like these guys like Max Volkanovski, Brian Ortega. If it wasn't sort of like for Conor
and Aldo, and probably Burrell.
Exactly, we wouldn't have saw this evolve, because, and a lot of people can sort of quote me, I'm wrong, but think of it like this: Aldo was the dominant champion, he was the dominant champion for WC, I forgot the fucking organisation, but he came in and he was basically still the dominant champion in the featherweight division. Did that division take off? No, it didn't, because people still thought it was boring. It was only until Conor came and that division came to light and everything sort of got mixed up, that he sort of got fucking, in Donald Trump words, great again, if you will. But yeah, it's always good to mix up a division to see what is. Now, that takes you on to the point of people saying, what about the 165, the 175 pound divisions and stuff like that? Bringing more divisions into it. Yeah, you might have more belts, but you're going to have more, in a way, like, they can sort of, UFC and mixed martial arts can sort of take wrestling into account. Wrestling, yeah, I know it's scripted, but if you've got all your belts tuck up in storylines and you want another one, what do? You just make a new belt, and you make a new storyline, if you will. So it's like, in the UFC, I think they've got to the star power now where they could afford to bring in more weight classes, because there is a shit ton more fighters out there. Look at how much stuff they do with, like, the Tough, look at how much stuff they do with Dana White Contender Series. They've got.
Dana's confirmed that Ultimate Fighter's coming back.
Well, that's it. They've got the shit. They know they've got the fighters out there, and at the end of the day, they could bring in these more weight classes and mix them up, and we'll get more stars.
Yeah, I agree. So next week we will actually have a review of a UFC event, fingers crossed, unless something drastically goes
fucking
wrong in the next few days.
Touch fucking wood.
Yeah, so definitely check back in for that. Anyway, you can follow me on Twitter at DJ Kirby. Follow Carlos here at Kirby_Carlos. Follow the show at 5RoundsPod. Thank you all for listening, and that is the end.
Adios, amigos.
You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.